Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast, where we interview business owners, leaders, or marketing professionals to find out their lessons and stories for success.
Welcome to episode number 98 of the CMO Marketing Podcast. It has been fantastic to have you here. Thank you very much for tuning in. We are fast approaching episode number 100. 99 is going to be entertaining as fuck. apologies about my swearing, but it just is. The old Spin Cycle crew are back, Edwina and Patrick. So 99 has actually already been recorded. I'm doing 98 today, but very well worth listening into. But whatever you do, don't miss out on this one. This is a gentleman by the name of Lou Jury, who is at the moment the founder of a venture capital company in Brisbane here called Sprint Ventures. He's the founder and managing partner. But Lou is probably most famously known for the Reload Business Group, Reload Media, one of the icons. It's probably a big word to be using, but it's fair to say in terms of digital marketing agencies, Reload has pretty much led the way for the past 10 years in processes, success, promotions, all those kind of things. If you are running an agency or if you're part of running an agency and you want to learn from somebody who's done it extremely well, then Lou is the person that you need to be listening to. Reload has won hundreds of awards over the years. It has just been consistently brilliant in what it does. Somebody that I look up to and admire, and somebody who has succeeded ever since he's put his mind to actually running businesses. So listen to Lou Jury. Even if you're not running an agency, you learn a lot from him. Even if you are running a small business, we talk about search engine optimization. We talk about his tips for running small businesses. Just a wealth of knowledge. Before we jump into that, the usual announcements. If you are looking for anybody to do any audio work, then speak to Gilberto. He is at thepodcastboss.com. He can help you out. If you could rate and review us on iTunes, that'd be fantastic. And probably the last thing is, if you want to come and find out what CMO does, CMO is a on-demand marketing staff platform. There you go. I've got it down to a few words now. That's what we do. We give you marketing staff on demand in your business to help you out, help you grow, whether you need them for one day a week for 3 months or whether you need them full-time for 12 months, whatever you need, we can help you out. So yeah, come and see us, cemoh.com, cemoh.com, and find out how we can help you. That's pretty much it. That's all the stuff I've got to get out of the way. As I say, if you listen to this one, and please listen to this one, then check in on the next one, 99, which is Eddie and Patrick back for the Spin Cycle. But before you listen to that one, let's enjoy the thoughts and ideas from Lou Jury of Sprint Ventures. So welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast. And my guest today is Lou Jury. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Simon. Great to be here.
Now, you and I obviously have a lot of history. We've known each other for a long time. You're based here in Brisbane with me. But for the benefit of the people that have no idea who the fuck Lou is, give us the two minute elevator pitch.
Okay, no problem. So I've been around, as you say, for a while, and we've known each other for a while, haven't we, Simon? And it's pretty much predominantly in the digital space. So yeah, my name's Lou Jury. I'm the founder of Sprint Ventures and the managing partner, and that's a venture capital firm. But to get to venture capital, you have to sort of go way back to web design and things like that in the late 90s. I set up a company with my brother in the late 90s called Alfresco, and Alfresco was a web design agency based out of Brisbane. 7 years to the day that we set that up in February 2006, we sold that to one of the companies that was part of John Singleton and Jack Singleton's group called the STW Group. And we sold that company. And normally when you sell to an ASX type entity like STW at the time, who are going around and buying up sort of, you know, small agencies of 30 odd staff like we were, basically you get slapped with a restraint. And so restraint is basically a term in the agreements that sort of say thou shalt not go and compete. And so what I did was we basically went out there and I did some consulting for a few years from 2006 to 2008. And on the day that my restraint finished, because I wanted to be honourable and sort of meet that, of course, I set up a company called Reload. And Reload, very quickly, I think due to a number of factors, timing and a couple of other things, maybe hitting the market with search and performance media and things like that, in 2008 really took off. And Reload Media was the predominant company at that time. It still is, the engine room of the Reload Business Group. But that's now 80 staff in three countries. And in 2016, I became chair of that company, handed the reins, the day-to-day client management reins and all the management over to Craig Somerville, who's a bit of a genius and my business partner. And Craig and I are still the two shareholders in Reload. And Craig's run that business for 4 years and it's allowed me to go and do this last part and my next 10-year plan and sprint, if you can call it that, which is Sprint Ventures, which is a lot of entrepreneur residence roles at River City Labs and, the aged care tech accelerators, but also investing in startups as a venture capital firm. There you go. Hopefully that was 2 minutes,
mate. No, that was good. It was way over 2 minutes, but that's cool.
Of course.
I was just, no way you were going to stick to 2 minutes. That was optimistic to start with. Okay, couple of things I want to unpack from that. I think one of the things, I'm going to blow smoke up your ass here for a second. One of the things that's always impressed me about you is, well, there's two things. Number one, that you always seem to have a plan. And I think where something you've just said then kind of alluded that there's a 10-year plan for Sprint Ventures, that there always seems to feel like you know where you're going or you know what the road looks like ahead of you. Is that the case or is that just are you selling me that really well and I'm falling for it?
No, I think I've had to learn that over the years, and I'm probably selling it to you, but you're probably falling for it. But when I look back now, and we're the same age, aren't we? We're bang on the same age, 74. Born in 1974, yeah. Both of us, right? So, you know, as you get a little wiser, and you've become very wise in your maturing age as well. Simon Dell. Basically, as you know, you start to reflect and you start to do a number of things. When you look back on your career, if you call it that, I've got an entrepreneurial bent like yourself. I haven't really worked for anybody, so to speak. I've been doing my own startups. It starts from when I was 12. When I was 12, I wanted to set up. I lived in the Adelaide Hills around all the wineries and all that. I didn't even realize how good it I had it. But basically, when I was a kid, I lived up in the Adelaide Hills in South Australia, I wanted to set up a winery touring company with a bus and that drove people around in 1986 to wineries because I thought that was a pretty cool thing. And I went to my parents and I pitched them a picture. I actually drew a picture. Instead of drawing BMXs back in the 80s, I was drawing buses, yeah. And I had all the decals on the side. And I said, look, I want to do this for the next few years. I want you to go and mortgage your house and put some money into it. They said, we're not going to do that because that costs lots of money. So I sort of said, I want to have a plan. I'm going to do this for the next number of years until I finish school and go to uni and do all that sort of thing. But I then moved when I was 14 to Canberra and sort of joined the eastern seaboard of Australia. But that sort of went by the by. But it started back then, Simon, in terms of I set a plan and I said, I'm going to do this for the next few years. And then when I did Alfresco, that was always a plan for a number of years. You know, that was always something that was never going to be forever. I then got into Reload in 2008, and I said to Craig, mate, let's go on a 14-year journey. Let's go on a journey here that is mapped out for us. And if it works, it works. Brilliant. If it doesn't, then we'll go and do something else. But, you know, let's not put too much pressure on this, but let's create something that is equity-based. Let's create something that we can work towards. And we did that in Auckland Harbour in 2010. So, you know, 6 years later after that, when I'd been there for 10 years, another 10-year sprint, if you can call it that, I then went, mate, it's all yours. He came back from the UK and said, what are you going to do, Mr. Jerry? What are you up to? And I went, mate, it's all yours. You can have it. Like, honestly, I've done my 10 years. I'm going to go and do some other stuff now. I'll be chair and I'll do the governance of the board and I'll do all that. I really have a lot of interest in this, but I really want to go up that next level and go and do some other stuff. And it's worked out brilliantly. And then Sprint came along, mate, and to answer your question in a roundabout way, yes, there is a plan, and this one involves kids. This one involves what's the next 30 years of creating something more than just wealth, something that I can hand to my kids through, say, a trust, and say, here is a vehicle for you and a platform that allows you to do something. It basically is something that's deeper from a social responsibility point of view to hand to the next generation. So I'm in that sort of, you know, looking at the next 10 to 20 years as something I can hand over. Of course, I don't want to make trust fund kids. That's not my aim. It's something that, you know, and you'll look at the second investment, what we've done. We're investing in some pretty cool solar technology, called, a company called Radian. And our first investment was in Halo, which is aged care, software, communication software. So trying to make a difference, and I'm trying to instill that for the next generation. And that's, you're right, it's like a 10-year roadmap, but I want to take Sprint out to 30 years until I'm, you know, on a Zimmer frame.
I think that kind of highlights the big difference between you and I. For people that potentially listen to this that know both of us, and even the people that don't know either of us, there's you kind of at 12 years old with that plan, right? And I hear, one of all the people I've spoken to on this podcast over the years, that's a very common theme, is that they kind of realized early on. Justin Dryett, Vinomofo, was and you talk about the Adelaide Hills, but he was into wine on an early age, and he knew that was all he ever wanted to do. A lot of those successful entrepreneurs have kind of realized it really early on, that the light bulb came on. It, you know, obviously it's changed over the years and things like that. I think the big difference between you and I is that you learned that at 12 years old, and I think I learned that at 43.
Don't undermine yourself, mate. I mean, you've been very successful with your businesses.
My 101st podcast, because this is number 98, my 101st podcast is going to be me actually recounting my journey, which I've never really done publicly. And I look back on it now and go, a lot of mistakes. I think what I wanted to say out of that was, I wanted to say to people who are listening to this, who are sitting there, who are maybe 43 now and going, well, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life, or, you know, I've been working for someone else for 20 years, 30 years, whatever it might be, that it isn't, you don't have to. Some people are lucky. Some people realize it at 12 years old. Some people realize it at 43, but it doesn't really matter when you realize. It's then the action that you take once you kind of realize what it is that you're going to do.
Yeah, and look, that's right. But you've been doing that as well, mate. I mean, all the businesses you've got, and it's very similar to me. I think having a plan is good, but sometimes you need to be as flexible, you know, outside of that plan, and you need to be making sure that you have an eye on the prize, but you learn from all the bits and pieces that you do and accumulate. And I've got a sort of a motto there, you know, fail fast, fail cheaply, fail internally, and fail quietly. You know, like, just do it internally and keep it on the down low and learn from that, and then just keep going. And you look at CMO now for you, mate, and, you know, you can see how you've built it out of 2 cents and all the other things you've done over the years as well. So, mate, I put you into that same category as I'm starting to interview you now, which is great. This is awesome. First time ever, I'm sure. I've flipped it.
I have no idea why there's not a Lou Jury podcast, because there should be.
Oh, thanks, mate. But, you know, it would be more like Joe Rogan, I reckon. It would get out of control, let's just say that.
Yeah, so, very, very quickly, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess the other two things that I really admired from the Reload days was, number one was the process. It seemed to me that Reload had a process for everything. Everything was kind of documented. And I remember you telling me one year about, you know, people re-signing contracts and how that process went and all those kind of things. And it just seemed to me like it was very automated. Was that the case?
Yeah, it's a good observation, Simon. And back sort of 10 years ago, when we were sort of trying to commercialize SEO and all the sort of things that were being done in a darkened bedroom with guys listening to Marilyn Manson, you know, and emo gear on, goth gear on, that was the SEO industry, right? And we tried to make it professional. We tried to bring it out of the bedroom and put a tie on at the time. Craig and I used to go out and see people with a suit, you know, a shirt and tie on. And you know, we tried to then do processes. And, you know, I think we tried to systemize services. I think that's probably a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
And I think that really helped us scale and grow, because at the time you back then, and if listeners remember, you know companies used to offer page one guarantee. We'll get you to the top of Google, and yeah. What that was great content and changing a title tag at midnight as you're working on an account. You'd wake up the next morning, it's number one because you just change a title tag. So it was a very different game back 10, 12 years ago. So what we did was we wanted to make sure that it was a professional industry, digital marketing. It wasn't a cottage industry. And what we did was really make sure that as we scaled, we were forced into having to do processes. When you're acquiring a couple of hundred new clients a year and growing at 100% year on year in terms of your numbers, you really need to have it all systemized. I can tell you, though, back in about 2015, 2016, Craig, as I said, came back from the UK and we actually decoupled processes. He actually came back and, took his learnings from the UK and actually went, you know what, we're actually going to strip this back and, remove a lot of the process. And what you see now with Reload at the scale that they've gone through in the last 4 years, and especially around, 2020 in terms of, direct-to-consumer with e-commerce growth, that's all because of that decoupling of process. So very interesting, yeah.
The other thing that I always admired was you seem to have, and I, again, correct me if I'm wrong, you always used to win a lot of awards, or you always used to be, you always getting up on a stage somewhere receiving some sort of glass block about something.
I've got them all in my office here. I'm sitting in my office and they're all gathering dust at the moment.
I remember you saying to me that you had actually employed, or Reload had actually employed, people specifically within the organization to go and win you awards. And I don't mean it like that, but there was people that were there in the marketing team within Reload that were dedicated to try and get you, in the news, and get your smiley face in the news and all those kind of things. Did I dream that, or was that actually the case?
Well, we didn't sort of employ anybody as like a dedicated award writer. I mean, that's actually not a bad one. I wouldn't mind seeing that on Seek, right? See if there's anybody actually a dedicated award writer. But look, it was certainly a strategy, and it is for a number of organizations. And the listeners out there, especially marketing managers and small business owners, would understand this, that it's part of your PR strategy. It's part of your growth strategy, and it's telling a narrative around where you're heading and what you're doing. And you've got to celebrate the wins. I learned that from the Alfresco days. We didn't really do a lot of awards. I think we did those old Deloitte ones, the Fast 500 whatever's. But I learned from that. And when I popped up at Reload and we were showing some growth, it actually allowed us to create opportunities from that. And I'll give you one example. I won the Lord Mayor's Business Awards award in the Young Person of the Year, funnily enough. And then they changed the category the next year. They reduced the age because they went, how can he get that? Anyway, I won the Young
Person. He's got no hair. He's not allowed to win an award.
Yeah. That's what it was. And John Aitken, the CEO of Brisbane Marketing, said, no, we're going to reduce it by 5 years if Lou got there. So I won the 2012 Young Business Person of the Year because it's celebrating, innovation and all that sort of stuff. And I went up on the stage and I bumped into a guy, who I think he presented the award to me, called Simon Holt, and he was the editor of Brisbane News.
Yeah, right.
And he said, why don't you pop in, mate, and have a coffee and we'll just have a bit of a chinwag. And what happened out of that was I wrote for Brisbane News for about 2 years as the technology writer. Whenever I wanted to, I'd just send him an article and he'd throw it up. But what happened there was that got syndicated to Canberra Times, Sydney Morning Herald, The Age, etc. And suddenly the profile from that one award is allowing me to sort of have greater visibility. So there's an example of using awards for PR. But look, the other thing is using awards for the right reason of where you want to take your business. And it's not all about the marketing side. So I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania in 2014 and I was offline going up to 6,000 meters and coming back down. And I picked up my phone back in the town and we'd won the National Customer Service Institute of Australia Best of the Best Customer Service Award. And we'd reloaded beaten American Express and iiNet and Melbourne Airport and all these others for offering the best customer service. And that's probably my proudest award because we're not going up against other marketing companies. We're not going up to be the best technology product-led company, but we're actually – we set out a vision to be the best customer intimacy company. We wanted to be the best at you know, customer relationships and driving growth through that mechanism. And that was a bit of a pat on the back, and that was an award for the staff. So that's another reason why you do awards. It's for them.
And presumably there was then, so there would have been someone within your organization that was looking. I mean, most people would never have heard of that award. And I'm sure it's a prestigious award, but, you know, most people would not know where to start looking for things like that.
So yeah, sure.
Do you think there's like, if that's the sort of thing, if you want to follow the kind of reload model that, you know, there's, you know.
It's a perfect example, mate. You've hit the nail on the head. Yeah. So we set out in about 2011 to be the best at customer service for our industry. And we had no idea about customer service awards. You know, we were going you know, the Fast 100s and the BRWs and the, you know, the Lord Mayor's Business Awards and Brisbane Business Awards and all that, right? So it's a more competitive sort of landscape. But that was important, yes. But really, we wanted to be known for the best customer service. So when you set a strategic vision and a purpose within the organization, and that permeates the values of the organization, you then naturally start acquiring and looking around and going, I reckon that award is built for us, because, right, you know, it comes across your desk on Twitter or wherever it comes in, and you're like, I reckon next year we should give that a crack, because I think, you know, we might shake this up a bit. And that's what we did. We actually shook that up, because we're little reload coming in against these massive operations, and these sort of ones were putting in call centers and all that sort of stuff, and every year the same large enterprises would go for it, but little reload, yeah, the SME came in, and we just did things differently, and that's why we got the pat on the back.
If you were talking to someone that was starting an agency today, or they, you know, been running an agency for a couple of years, what's the one lesson for you that you would say to them? You know, here's how you grow the business. Was there a particular channel that you found you got more customers through than others, or was it just, you know, just a bit of everything?
Mate, I mean, I just had about 50 things I could have said, I can say now. But I'll in no order at all, partnerships are massive. You know, we know that relationships in Australia are the number one reason why people do business with you, and out of that is the trust factor. So you'll refer to someone because they trust you. Now, back in 2006, we were competing in the web design game with Alfresco, with Emu and Crew and Speedwell and all those sort of guys, right? So there's businesses around, it's still around today, but Ice Media as well, we're another one. And F5, there was a company called F5 that used to do a huge amount of good stuff as well. So I basically rang all of those people and said, lads, and because they're mainly males, you know, can I have a coffee? I've been banned from building websites by my wife because she doesn't want me on that treadmill anymore. But I'm going to do this thing called SEO. I'm going to do, and when you finish your website, hand them to me and Reload, and I'll make sure they can optimize, you know, be optimized for the internet. And back then it was changing title tags and getting them all ready. And look, we'll actually help you out as well. So my lead generation was 50% of my leads between sort of 2008 and 2010 were partners. And that was my former competitors. So if someone has sort of had a said, you'll never do business with your former competitors, actually relationships are trust. They said to me, all of them, well, actually, we trust you because you're not going to compete with us anymore, but you did websites at the same level that we did, and therefore we'll flick that to you, and let's have a relationship and a partnership. So, look, that's an example of partnerships are massive in Australia especially, and I know overseas it's important, but in Australia for sure, that's how we do business, and that's really important. The other big thing is, look, just thinking out loud of why we did well, I suppose, is we watched cash. Cash was everything. We made sure we got prepayments for things like campaigns, you know, like, you know, make sure you get paid up front so you don't, come unstuck and become like a media bank and have to get insurance against that. That was another big one. And you know, a lot of companies, especially in the digital agency game, you know, wearing a lot of risk from that point of view. And it's a lot more risky when you're smaller. You can wear a bit more risk when you're larger. And I suppose the other thing is it's about great humans. As you've always done, Simon, you've always employed great people around you. And I think that the great people that I put around me were way better than I was. I was good for doing the relationships thing, as I just said, but I put in humans that were way better at specific things than I was. And Craig was one of those who's 14 years younger than me, but actually running and transforming businesses is a skill that is way beyond me.
And with the with your customers and your client base at Reload, would you, if you had to give them advice, aside from buying more of your services, which is obviously what you'd recommend, but,
sure.
But is there anything, and I know you and I both know there's no magic bullet when it comes to growing a business, but what have you seen of all the clients that you've worked with over the years, what have you seen work the best for them?
Right. So it's when they're totally integrated with the agency. Long gone are the days where the agency staff lean on the water cooler in the tea room and have a good bitch session about the client, right? It's gone completely 180. And that's the old ad agency model that just should be decimated, and hopefully it's gone. Because I'll give you an example. A lot of the Reload clients are actually in the internal Slack channel of Reload's Slack channel for themselves. So they're actually embedded inside the organization. There's hot desks set up at Reload that they can come in and work out of and plug into. They become part of the staff. So if you've got 10 people on an account, you'll have the two clients, you know, the marketing managers inside the actual Slack channel. There's no hiding anything anymore. And this has been the Reload way for the last, you know, the whole time we've been going. But transparency is everything, and it's part of our values. So look, I'd say coming back in from a client relationship level, embed yourself inside the agency that you're working with, the supplier that you're working with, you know, build that trust with them, because it's like investing in startups. You're in the trenches for a couple of years. You can't bounce around all the time and go from agency to agency, which is a bit of a red flag, by the way, to us in the agency world. If someone is bouncing around, it's similar to someone who's, you know, on their LinkedIn profile only lasting 6 months in jobs. You know, it's very similar. So from a client perspective, build those long-term relationships with the agency, and you're going to get way bigger bang for buck. They're going to go the extra mile to deliver really cracking results for you. So, I think just and I think a lot of clients, a lot of larger organizations are seeing that, and there's a lot of great relationships being formed.
I want to touch on search, because obviously you've been embedded in search for years, you know, and I know you've moved out of that now, but I know sort of, you know, one of the things Reload does very well is search. Is it still such a big deal in 2020 as perhaps it was back in, you know, 2012, 2013, and, you know, certainly over the last 10 years, but is that still important for a small business or any business of any size that they think about search, and then obviously I'll throw the voice search into this, you know. Where is that whole industry at the moment?
So it's a very good question, because it's very quickly transitioning into digital transformation. So if you go into an agency these days, you don't really have an SEO department anymore. You don't have a lot of technical people sitting there doing a lot of techie things. It's much more you know, it's like your agency, Simon, it's CMO. It's led by content and led by a different interface, if you like, which is content marketing led, which is relationship led, which is, you know, a very different way of doing it than 10 years ago, as I said. So absolutely, there's companies still and SMEs still coming in and going, hi, I'd like some SEO. And they're often the ones that actually don't actually do SEO with you, but they might do variations on the theme. So they might do content marketing, they might do social media, they might do performance media buy, they might do digital transformation customer journey workshops and persona development and things like that. So I think it still is a lead into an agency, but the good agencies out there, like the Reloads and CMOs, what they're doing is sort of unpacking things back to business strategy, the values of that actual customer, and then saying, right, we think you actually need these things for phase one, and ongoing, these are the other areas that you need. And as I said, you know, the old school sort of compartmentalizing SEO and PPC and all that is sort of maybe totally integrated rather than sort of, you know, just throwing down people's throats, so to speak. Because I think what happened, and many companies would have seen this, SEO got a bit of a bad reputation probably 5 years ago.
Absolutely.
because every man in his dog, it was a low barrier to entry to come in. You could get out of uni or do whatever you were doing, in one day hang a shingle out and say I'm an SEOer and charge exorbitant fees, take all the money, and then end up on those Whirlpool forums about ripping people off.
Mm.
And there's plenty of stories out there about that. So you can see some carnage. So I think people, clients, organisations have been a bit wary, and they want to make sure that there's an end-to-end process behind what they're doing. With digital being now the heavyweight, it's come from below the line and risen up where budgets have been appropriated from traditional spends into digital spends. It's actually got the eye of the board, eye of the CEO, and they're attending those conversations and agency catch-ups from the digital interface. And so it's become a digital transformation chat rather than just a pure SEO and PPC chat.
I still see the small businesses being, and probably the only word I can use here is defrauded. Defrauded out of money. I saw one 2 months ago. She was paying $400-$500 bucks a month, and I just said to her, "You're throwing the money away." To an agency, and I used inverted commas for that down in Sydney. And I think the two flags that I would say to people in an SEO space, and again, we're looking at more at the smaller side of things where businesses are perhaps paying for SEO, but they don't have anyone internally doing their marketing. So they don't really know what's happening.
Sure.
I think the two red flags for me would be the keywords that people are saying they're going to get you to the page one of Google for, blah, 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 is whether people actually search on them, if there is any traffic on them, or they have just been plucked out of somewhere because they were easy to get you ranking on.
Yeah, that's right.
And the second thing is whether they're giving you a report on your search traffic back to day one. Because the red flag I see is where the agency says, well, look, here was your traffic in November, here's your traffic in December. And then in December, or then in January, they say, here's your traffic in December and here's your traffic in January. Those month-to-month fluctuations they can be very ambiguous. What you should be looking at is where your business is over 12 months of a campaign like that. Are those kind of the two things that you would perhaps, that you've seen yourself?
Yeah, I have, mate. And I like that second one that you just talked about, actually having visibility from a helicopter view about your analytics and your data. And it's beyond some makeup that some, person's outsourced and trying to get you over the line from a sales level. And, there is still a little bit of that happening, mate. Absolutely. I think the clients that Reload is is partnering with, even if they're SMEs, Reload has a number of SMEs clients, not just big ones, but I think they're the ones that have educated themselves around all those things you just said, and they understand the numbers about true both return on investment but return on ad spend as well when they're doing the performance side of things. So they're actually saying, look, we're not going to be ripped off here. We've maybe been, educated, if you like, in the past. But I think the big thing for that is that SMEs and small businesses need to understand that there is a lot of free stuff. Agencies will help educate you for free. They'll give you an understanding of truly what the transparency of the industry is. So don't if you're feeling like there's just something not right and you're not getting any results, which is actually money in your bank, not just leads or clients potentially calling you and things like that. You actually want money in your bank from any digital marketing activity, whether it's SEO or whatever you do, right? If you're not getting any of that, not just a bad vibe or a bad feeling, you've got the right to move, and you've got the right to go and attend events, meetups, and talk to myself or Simon or whoever, an agency, and basically they'll give you in 5 minutes a true read of the land, even if you don't use them in the future. It's important that the industry keeps educating and keeps making sure that there's not those diminishers out there. We get rid of those diminishers and they hopefully over time all fall off the truck. Because I think, you're right, there's still a number going on, probably predominantly in the southern states, Simon. I would see that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a fairly famous agency that lasted, I think, 2 or 3 years here in Brisbane. That,
oh, the one that sponsored the Porsche.
Yeah, the one that sponsored the Porsche. Yeah. That everyone still talks about to this day, you know.
Into Whirlpool. Yeah, Whirlpool. It's all over that one. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's amazing how they pulled the wool over so many people's eyes, and presumably took a lot of money and didn't. I mean, from what I hear, they never paid any rent and all those kind of things. So,
yeah, look, it's borderline Ponzi scheme stuff, I call it living on deposits. Basically, what they're doing is taking 3 months auto debited off your credit card. Put banking that money and then using that to go to the next step, which is actually a pyramid scheme, shop and they pop up somewhere else. And that has a bit like the building industry that has blighted, I think, and put the noses out of joint quite rightly of a number of organizations over time. And I think companies, that we're talking about here that are credible and transparent and purpose driven and are trying to, rebuild a bit of that credibility, right?
Yeah, and I often say to clients, if someone's going to charge you $400 for SEO, you are wasting the money because
exactly
you're not going to get any value from $400. And I know a lot of small businesses want, again, they see that silver bullet. They go, well, I can afford $400 a month because that's $100 a week.
Yes,
and I can afford that, and it's going to give me all these great results. But they see the silver bullet and they think it's a silver bullet and they're prepared to wait 3 months and then they're prepared to wait 6 months and all of a sudden they've spent $3,500-$4,000 and had no results and then the agency moves on.
Yeah.
And often some of them are too scared to say no or say, I'm going to cancel you, or they get sold this, oh, look, that keyword's gone up 10 places. Look at the results we're starting to get.
And that's a very good point. The other, the point that I would sort of make sure, if you're in that position right now and you're not getting the bang for buck, because as Simon says, you do need a lot of fuel in the tank, a lot of investment of time from an agency, and that costs money and that will cost more than a couple hundred bucks a month. Take it to a lawyer. Take those terms and conditions that they're trying to screw you down and lock you into 12 months and things like that. Reload many years ago moved to month to month. So, if you're doing a program of work with someone who's like a principal like Simon and it's a 12-month agreement that you're going to be doing rolling phases of work, then absolutely fine. If it's just a 12-month contract, you're auto-debited money from a person that you never speak to or see and touch and feel, then, go and see your lawyer, because it's better to spend a couple hundred bucks or $1,000 getting out of that than wasting even more on poor results and feeling like you're locked into a contract. I would fight those contracts, and I would recommend that you go and get out of them and go and talk to someone else.
To kind of finish up today, what I want to find out a little bit more about Sprint Ventures, because you've got a very specific area for investment. So tell us what you guys are looking for when it comes to investment.
Yeah, sure. So Sprint Ventures is a company that's been going for 12 months, and we're closing off our first sovereign fund, which is a fund that's investing in technology-led startups, and we call them scale-ups because they're the ones that are high margin, going global, led by great founders and teams, and they need some capital to grow. So generally, they're a couple of years old, these startups. We see about 600 pitch decks a year. We have about 100 pitches and presentations. We had 3 last Wednesday night, for example. We mentor a lot of the startups in the startup lab and ecosystems. And then we invest in, a handful, 3 or 4, yeah. 4 or 5 this year. We in our sovereign fund, we'll have about 12 to 15 by the end of or mid to end next year. And we're going to raise some more funds. So what we do is we cut checks that sort of go into a raise round. So other venture capital firms will cut the same sort of check. And these companies might be raising $1.5 million and with 2 or 3 venture capital firms backing them in. We normally own between 5 and 10% of the company, so a minority, but we bring a huge anti-stick mentality. We bring the carrot, right? So what we're doing is really deep-level mentoring. It's like being on the board, but you're actually rolling the sleeves up and you're helping them out wherever you can. So a good example, and if you want to check out Sprint Ventures, which is a completely different thing to digital marketing, but actually I do SEO. So if you type in VC Brisbane, mate, we do rank pretty highly. But anyway, once an SEOer, always an SEOer, right?
Yeah, yeah,
so, absolutely. So sprint.vc, so sprint.vc is the URL. On there, there's a company called Halo. And so to give you an example of the value that we provide, one of our investment analysts, Max, has been helping with the recruitment of, you know, a marketing manager, helping out, you know, doing some LinkedIn checks and things like that with one of our portfolio teams. And you don't charge for any of that. But what you're doing is because you've already got an investment in the company, you're there to help them, you know, globally scale. Halo are partnering with Reload, and once they're once they're allowed out of Melbourne, they're going to go and hot desk out of the Reload London office and go and say good day to those guys about European expansion. So this is this circular economy of how we're building Sprint, and it's great fun, mate. It's actually reinvigorating in terms of, you know, when you first start a company and you start to get that little bit of success, yeah, and you start going, wow, people like this and there's something going on here. And we're just getting that feeling towards the end of this year, riding those tailwinds of, you know, people, investors out there who we target are called wholesale sophisticated investors, and they're ones that have commercial property or they're generally done pretty well in life, and they've got their money parked in cash, which is giving them nothing. And so we've actually become quite our alternative high risk venture capital world has become quite a interesting and attractive space for them. So look, mate, it's the VC game I think is being cleaned up as well. VC venture capital got a bit of a bad name out of Silicon Valley about, you know, really, you know, putting terms on teams, on founders and the businesses that weren't very favorable to the founders. So we've gone full transparency. This is what we're doing. Here's some terms that are way more favorable, and let's roll the sleeves up together and go for a 3 to 5 year sprint.
You don't ever feel the urge to sneak into a darkened room and do a bit of web developing at any point, do you now?
Oh, mate, no. I use Squarespace. I use Squarespace, and I use all my tools and things like that these days. So, look, I do a bit of SEO on my wife's HR business, Advancer, right, and I do Sprint just to sort of have the visibility out there. And, you know, as I said, once an SEO, you know, it's always in the blood, mate. So, yeah, all good.
Do you give your wife any advice on how to run a business, or is that one of those unspoken rules in the house?
Well, you know what it's like, mate. You know what it's like. It's, she does very well from an HR point of view. She's got some good tech around compliance for human resources. So, look, I've helped her out with that, and there's been advice there, and I'm a director of that company. But generally speaking, she's the one that's helped me over the last, 15, 20 years in terms of giving me advice about the HR and workforce planning piece. So I've learned to listen. That's probably something that I didn't do very well when I was young. And, mate, the benefit of a bit more maturity in hindsight.
Hindsight's the only exact science, as my father says.
Good comment, mate. Good comment.
So, all right. So last question. Sure. Outside of all of this, outside of the work, what keeps you going? What do you do to entertain yourself? And you know, family aside, business aside, what do you do to chill out and relax?
Well, I bought a jet ski last year, Simon.
Oh Christ, that's real midlife crisis stuff happening. Oh, mate, right,
it's
there.
It's the fastest on the market. It's called a Sea-Doo 300 RXT, 300 horsepower thing. And I got it just before. Apparently now with COVID, they've become hot property. I was up at Noosa in the river there, and I pulled up, and a bloke walked up and went, "Hi, I'm a fly in, fly out. Would you like to sell me your jet ski, you know, on the shore?"
Oh, wow.
You know, it's become hot and all that sort of thing. But going out with my my daughter and her friend at last holidays off Noosa, we saw dolphins, turtles, and a whale with her calf just off of Tiwa, about a kilometer out, slapping its petrol fin, and you have to be about 300 meters away, but you just kill the engine, you sit out there, and just the smile on their faces, and just sitting out there in the ocean going, how good is life? You know, like, we've got this so good, especially, you know, we live in Brisbane and we've got that on our doorstep, but just, you know, clearing the air and going away for a week and just having a great time. That's what I do, mate. I've learned again over the years to stop looking at my Slack, to, you know, put my autoresponders on my email and just go and clear your head, because you need those moments of clarity that, that they'll benefit when you come back into your business setting. So taking breaks is really important, and holidays. Look, mate, I've got a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old, so that's a lot of sport and a lot of school stuff, and I'm enjoying that for the next few years because that will be over very fast. And so, I'm sure there's plenty more golf and escaping to the coast once they're doing their own thing in 5 years' time. So, yeah, mate, that's me at the moment, loving life.
What I'm going to ask you one other question because I've given you all this credit for the last 41 minutes. Tell us your worst habit, worst business habit. What's something that you still look at yourself and just go, I wish I could stop doing that?
Worst business habit. That's a very good question. I think probably taking too long on one specific task. I bounce. I have multiple windows open on my Chrome, right? So I'll have five email addresses open in five tabs, and I'll have massive amounts of working documents.
I've got three open here,
Right. So I tend to bounce all day between all of those tabs, and I would love to be able to be one of those persons that's called in Bourbon, which is one of the Myers-Briggs and LSI and Hogan and all that. Bourbon, they call them completer finishers, and I am the opposite to a completer finisher. I'm a resource investigator, so I'm really good at sales, right, as probably everybody's gathering.
We're
the same. But completer finishers are the ones that just stick to the task, stick to that one tab, and they get it done, and it's perfect, and they send it off, and job done, and they can move on to the next task. I bounce all day between tasks, and I reckon it's just probably my worst habit. And, of course, there's always news open and Twitter open, and you get distracted. Mm-hmm. On what the US election's doing or COVID and so there you go, mate. There's a bit of my inside world of maybe 10 years' time, Simon, I'll be a completer finisher. There you go. I doubt it.
I have the same issue, and I try and do a lot of writing, both for work and for and fiction and things like that. And I was sitting on Twitter the other day, and there was an author, a guy called Hugh Howey, who wrote a series, The Wall series. It's a science fiction series, and I think it's going to be made into a TV show or something.
So. Awesome.
And he was unpacking. He did one of those unpacking videos a product called Free Write. So FreeWrite, Free Write. It's a smart typewriter.
Oh wow, cool.
And it's just the most beautiful thing you'll ever see. It's a regression. It's a regression from a laptop to what would have been a traditional typewriter, but sort of somewhere in between the two.
And repurposed for the modern age and what Bluetooth enabled and all that.
So,
awesome.
So it syncs with Google Docs and Microsoft stuff and things like that, but you can't do anything else on it other than type.
Nice.
So I sat there and saw that and just went, I'm getting me one of those, and I'm counting the days for it to arrive so that I can shut the laptop, I can leave the phone somewhere and just sit there, and I am then forced to write because that's the thing, that's the only thing that the machine does.
I've just logged on and I can see you can get an American one or an international one.
You can't get in the Australia at the moment. For some reason, but the keyboard layout's virtually the same. So
is it right? Yeah. And look, this is the thing, isn't it? It's about sitting down and dedicating time to a specific task. It's with how busy we all are, and I think everybody would be feeling the same. But just making that time to get it done. So,
and I think there's business and opportunities in there, and helping people do that, because people like you and me are too distracted by other things that are happening around us. And where there is an opportunity to perhaps teach people or train people or deliver them a piece of software or deliver them a tool that helps them focus and helps them concentrate, that's...
Well, there you go. There's a whole industry. Someone out there listening, Simon, needs to come up and become the world's first distraction coach. And invent a whole end-to-end strategizer type lean canvas model, and come on, I want to see that. I'll be your first client.
There's a huge market in that. Huge market. Anyway, mate, thank you very much for being on the show today.
Pleasure.
Look, it's always fun chatting to you, and look, we'll no doubt catch up somewhere at some networking thing where we bump into each other again.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, mate. Cheers.
That's pretty much it from me. It was SEMO Marketing Podcast number 98. Thank you very much for listening in. We very much appreciate you doing that. If you could rate and review us on iTunes, if you could share this podcast, if you can just let people know in the marketing industry, people running business, if you could let them know about us, that would be fantastic. Otherwise, remember that episode number 99 is on the way soon with Edwina Luck and Patrick Condren, The Spin Cycle. We're all back, and it's basically 45 minutes of people shouting at each other. So highly entertaining. Hope to see you again for the next episode.